sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Across the alley from the Alamo lived a pinto pony and a Navajo who sang a sort of Indian idaho to the people passing by. The pinto spent his time a-swishing flies, and the Navajo watched the lazy skies, and very rarely did they ever rest their eyes on the people passing by. One day they went a-walking along the railroad track. They were swishing, not a-looking, doot, doot. They never came back. Oh, across the alley from the Alamo, when the summer sun decides to settle low, a fly sings an Indian hearty-ho to the people passing by. Across the alley from the Alamo lived a pinto, a pony, and a Navajo who used to bake friolis in cornmeal dough for the people passing by. They thought that they would make some easy bucks by washing their friolis in Duz and Lux, a pair of very conscientious clucks to the people passing by. Then they took this cheap vacation. The shoes were polished bright. No, they never heard the whistle, toot, toot. They're clear out of sight. Oh, across the alley from the Alamo, when the starlight beams its tender glow, the beans go to sleep and then there ain't no dough for the people passing by. One day they went a-walking along the railroad track. They were swishing, not a-looking, toot, toot. They never came back. Oh, across the alley from the Alamo, when the summer sun decides to settle low, a fly sings an Indian hidey-ho to the people passing by. Across the alley from the Alamo.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight we have two great mystery gems for you. We begin with a wonderful episode of Suspense starring the great actor Robert Young, who later became really famous in Father Knows Best. In that program, I think it was always Father Knows the Least. And then for our second show, we have one of my favorites, or it actually is my favorite. We have The Whistler, and it's got a great, great plot. If you want to reach me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and now let's enjoy our great shows.
And now, with A Murder of Necessity and the performance of Mr. Robert Young, hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
I'm walking along a city street with murder in my heart. Tonight is the night I must kill. Remember the name, Herbie Sachs. Fat, sweaty Herbie Sachs. He'll be sitting behind his big desk and he'll look up at me and smile, and his fat neck will spill over the expensive collar of the expensive shirt that he'll be wearing. So far, so good. No one around. So far, so good. Why do I keep saying that? Some sign painter will have a new job. Scrape the name in gold letters off the glass door. Herbert J. Sachs, private investigator, will soon be dead, gentlemen. Through the panel of the glass door, the fat shadow of the big man sitting happily in his swivel chair. Mr. Sachs waits within, murderer. Knock on his door.
Oh, hold it a minute. The janitor wants to come in.
Gets up from the chair, Herbie. come and open the door. Meet your doom.
Start in the other office.
Oh. Hello, Mark. What do you want? A
few moments of your time.
Oh, I'm busy. Let's make it some...
Inside, Herbie. Go ahead, Herbie. Sit down.
What do you want?
Herbie, I'm through. You've bled me for the last nickel.
What are you talking about?
I made a mistake a long time ago. I went hunting and I killed a man. It was an accident. But instead of turning myself in and getting off on a charge of manslaughter, I listened to the advice of a man named Herbie Sachs.
Go home, Mark.
Nobody saw you shoot him, you said. Nobody did, except you, Herbie. I'll be silent, said Herbie.
Now, look, Mark.
I've had to pay for your silence. Haven't I, Herbie? Through the nose.
Who do you think you are, coming here like this? Why, for 2 cents...
For 2 cents, you'd sell your mother, your grandmother, and your wife, Gretchen. A nice girl who doesn't deserve you.
I'm warning you, Mark.
You're through warning people, Herbie. I wonder how many others will breathe easier when once they learn you're no longer exercising the big stick.
What are you going to do?
This. Now the sign painter can scrape the gold letters off the glass door. Herbert J. Sachs sits dead in his swivel chair, the blood running a crazy pattern down the front of his expensive shirt, his mouth silent. No words, no accusations. No talk of any kind. No talk. Wait. Wait, Herbie was talking to somebody when I knocked on the door. Nobody here. Who was he talking to? Must have been talking to somebody on the telephone. He didn't hang it up. Hello? Hello? Who's there? Please don't... The phone in Herbie's desk drawer had been off the hook. Herbie'd been talking to someone on the phone. Who had it been? Somebody I knew? Somebody I didn't know? Somebody like Herbie who'd make me suffer some more? I had to find out. But how? How? I got an idea. The phone pad. Today, March 24th, and under the date, three names. L. Collins, the name Janice, and a phone number, and an Art LaFoon. Could it have been one of them? On the phone, you heard... What? Was it a radio? Was it a record? That's all you have to go on, but it'll have to be enough. Even now, whoever it was may be calling the police. Down in the corner drugstore, I look up L. Collins. There's only one. Strange for a name like Collins, but only one. Lucius Collins, who lives on North Woodburn Drive. The taxi gets me there in 20 minutes.
Yes?
Mrs. Lucius Collins?
Yes.
Is your husband at home?
Yes. You want to see him?
If it's possible.
Come in. Just follow me. What did you say your name was?
I didn't say, but it's Paul. Paul Drake.
Oh. Lucius, there's a Mr. Drake who wants to see you.
Drake?
Yes, Mr. Collins. A mutual friend asked me to call. I'd like to speak to you alone, if I may.
I'll close the door.
Mr. Collins,
Sit down, Mr. Drake.
Thank you.
You said a mutual friend sent you? Who?
Herbie Sachs sent me, Mr. Collins.
What does he want?
He's not satisfied with the present setup.
Mr. Drake, I'm paying him all I can now. I can't pay any more. If I did, my wife might find out, then how would I explain it? Doesn't Mr. Sachs understand that?
He's not satisfied, Mr. Collins. That's all I can tell you.
But what am I going to do?
Well, Herbie just gave me a general picture of your situation. Perhaps if you filled me in on the details...
There are no details, Mr. Drake. I made a mistake once. I met a girl. We grew fond of each other. Naturally, my wife suspected something was wrong. She went to Mr. Sachs and had him trail me. He found out about us, the girl and me, but he didn't tell my wife. He said he wouldn't tell her if I paid him. And so I did. The girl went away, but I still pay Mr. Sachs.
I understand, Mr. Collins.
You do? You really do?
Have you been home all evening, Mr. Collins?
Well, yes.
I guess I'll just tell Herbie what you told me. If you can't increase it, you can't do it. That radio over there looks like an old one.
Huh? Oh, it is. We've had that for years. It's broken. I haven't bothered to have it fixed.
Mm-hmm. You got a phonograph?
Yes, an old one. The kind your wine's not much good. It's up in the attic, stored away.
Well, thanks, Mr. Collins.
Thanks?
I mean, for seeing me, or letting me talk to you.
Well, I don't understand it. A man like you working for Herbie Sachs?
I know, Mr. Collins. I don't seem like the kind that would. That poor little man, if only I could have told him, whispered to him, yelled to him, Mr. Collins, your unhappiness is over. The man who held you in the arms of terror is no more. He's dead. He's up in his office, spilling blood all over his nice clean carpet. You're a free man, free to pick up the pieces of your life and start again. But tomorrow you'll know. It'll be in all the papers. That'll be soon enough. First name on the list I check off. Lucius Collins is a man with problems of his own. He didn't play his broken radio or the old phonograph stored away up in his attic. So I call the phone number next to the name on the pad that reads Janice.
Just picked it up and walked away with it. Leon's Biotech speaking.
Is Janice there?
Yeah, but she's awful busy waiting on tables. Can I give her a message?
No. I'll call later.
Okay.
I found Leon's bar downtown on Main. It was a cheap place, but it was full of people. Then I saw the girl waiting on the tables. She was pretty, but a prettiness that was cheap like the bar. I walked over to an empty booth in the corner and sat down. I waited. Then she saw me and came over and stood beside me.
What do you have?
Whiskey and water.
Whiskey and water, right.
Janice.
Hmm?
Come here a minute.
Sure. Yeah? What is it?
I want to talk to you.
Look, I'm awful busy right now.
Herbie sent me.
I didn't get your name.
Drake. Paul Drake.
Herbie sent you?
Yes, Herbie sent me.
For what?
What does Herbie usually want?
What kind of a holdup is this? Twice in 1 week.
Herbie's an ugly man, isn't he, Janice?
You're a funny guy. I'd almost get the impression you didn't like him.
Well, it isn't necessary for an employee to like his employer, is it?
No. What are you? His collection agency?
In a sense. I'm also an advisor of his.
What do you mean?
Sometimes I advise him about his clients. Perhaps I could advise him about you.
What would you advise him?
I think you're a pretty girl, a very pretty girl, Janice. I'd advise him of that.
You shouldn't say things like that.
Why not?
Because they're not true.
Yes, they are.
What do you want from me, mister?
I'd like to take you home tonight, to where you live. That's all I want.
That's a lot.
I think you're pretty, Janice. I told you.
I get off in an hour. You can take me home.
In an hour. She got up from the table and walked across the room. There was something strange about this girl, something I didn't understand, but something I had to find out. She stopped at the jukebox in the corner of the bar next to the phone booth and dropped a dime into the machine. That's when I heard this song again.
Well.
Oh. Nice music. You like it?
My favorite record. I play it all the time.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Well, should we go?
I'll call a cab.
You don't have to.
Why not? Ride home in style.
It's only a couple of blocks from here. We can walk. Wouldn't you like to walk?
All right. Beautiful night. Not a cloud in the sky.
I love fresh air.
What's your last name, Janice?
I've got a lot of them. Call me Janice Gibson.
All right, Janice Gibson. What kind of a girl are you, Janice?
If you work for Herbie Sachs, you know all about me.
Not the details, pretty girl.
Why do you keep saying pretty girl?
Because it's a statement of fact. You are pretty, Janice.
I'm the kind of a girl that you read about in the confession magazines. Only they make those stories up. They're fiction. My story's not fiction. It's a real one.
I believe you.
Long time ago, a girl with big ideas came out of the sticks, landed in a big city.
And she met a man named Herbie Sachs.
She met him after she'd gone off the deep end. She wanted thrills. Those thrills ended her up in a straitjacket in a sanitarium. They were the kind of thrills you don't write the family back home about.
Mm-hmm. But how does Herbie figure?
Herbie is a man with many ways and means. And when the girl ended up in an addict, Herbie was the big brother. He had a soft shoulder and he stretched out a helping hand.
Mm-hmm.
After I was cured, he told me I had to pay him for his silence. The silence that would keep the family back home from finding out about the thrilling things that had happened to the girl from the sticks.
Are you?
Yes. Well over them.
That's good.
Why do you work for a man like him?
Check it off the living. Were you at the bar all night tonight?
Ever since 8 o'clock, why?
Nothing. I guess I'm making conversation because I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Look, mister, you can walk on the other side of the street. I didn't
ask you. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't mean it that way, Janice. Honest. Believe me, what I meant was I didn't want to talk because I suddenly feel kissing you.
This is where I live. The Bug House. Want to come up and meet the fleas? Courtesy of Herbie Sachs.
Janice, don't be bitter.
I got one room and a hot plate. What am I supposed to do? Dance a dance because I can't afford anything better?
Look, I'll talk to Herbie. I'm his advisor, remember? Maybe I'll advise him to change his mind.
If you thought you could...
I'll try. That much I promise. I'll advise him that you ought to have a nice apartment to live in. And a stove.
Pa?
Yes?
You want to come upstairs? I'll make you some coffee.
I have something to take care of, and it's late. Maybe after...
You won't come back. Once you leave, I won't see you anymore. You're that kind of guy.
I'll come back.
I won't see you again. I know I won't. Kiss me, Paul. Hard. Like you were going away for a long time. Come upstairs. Let me make you some coffee.
I'll be back.
Paul.
Janice, someday if you ever find out that this is all over, go back home to where there aren't thrilling things for a girl like you to do.
I don't know.
They'll never know. Home is a long and faraway memory.
I don't know.
Promise me. On the kiss.
Maybe. Maybe, Paul. Maybe.
I took her in my arms and kissed her again. Then she turned and disappeared through the door into the cheap boarding house. And the black night closed in on me again, and the fear and fright returned. Under the streetlight up at the corner, I checked the last name on the phone pad, Art LaFoon. He's not at his place of business on Houston Avenue, the watchman tells me. Mr. LaFoon is never at his place of business at 2:30 in the morning, he says with raised eyebrows. Even though it is a novelty business and novel things are always happening. So I wait until 8 o'clock the following morning. Near his novelty business, I find a very shabby hotel. And for $2, the night clerk tells me that I can have a bed with a clean sheet and a loud knock on my door when it's 7 o'clock. By 5 minutes after eight, I'm standing in front of Mr. LaFoon's novelty business on the third floor, my hand closed tightly around a piece of blue steel that means death for Mr. LaFoon.
Yeah, all right, Midge. The shipment will get out to you on Friday. Okay. I promise you, Midge. And when LaFoon makes a promise, he keeps his word. Okay, kid, I'll see you. Ah, hello, brother.
Mr. LaFoon?
That's it, brother, LaFoon. Anything that's novel or new, see LaFoon. Here, let me show you these small telescopes we just got in. I made some a couple of years ago, but those were tame. Here, take a look at this one.
Look,
Go ahead. Just squint your eye. You got to focus.
Herbie sent me.
Yeah, I was... What was that, brother?
Herbie Sachs.
Yeah? You mentioned the name, Herbie Sachs. What am I supposed to do?
You know Herbie.
Who are you, anyway?
I work for Herbie Sachs.
You made another statement. Tell me how to react, brother.
Hey, look, Mr. Novelty Man, I don't know how to convince you, but I'll get rough if I have to.
Okay, take it easy, brother, take it easy. That's an expensive shirt.
That's why I'm here. Herbie doesn't like you buying such expensive shirts.
Who are you?
I'm recently hired to make collections. I've come to collect.
You know what? I think you're lying. You don't work for Herbie Sachs. You don't work for him at all.
I told you I was just recently hired.
And why didn't he tell me you'd be around, brother? I talked to him on the phone last night. Why didn't he tell me, huh?
You talked to Herbie on the phone last night?
Yeah, brother, I talked to him.
What happened when you talked to Herbie?
What do you mean, what happened? Who are you, brother?
Nobody you'd be interested in.
Yeah? Well, maybe the cops would be interested.
Put it down.
Get your hands off of me.
Later, Mr. LaFoon. Later, we'll take care of some unfinished business when it's dark and no one will see me. I got out of the building. I had to before someone saw me. Saw my face and would recognize it again. But tonight, when it's dark, I'll wait for you and follow you, Mr. LaFoon. It was you on the phone. Now I know. Buy a paper and go home. Lay low. When I get home, I open the paper, and there it is, on page 2, an account of the death of Herbert J. Sachs, the private investigator, shot through the chest twice by an unknown assailant. How soon would it be before Mr. LaFoon would tell the police the name of the unknown assailant? Long enough, because LaFoon was the kind of man who'd wait for the killer to get in touch with him. LaFoon was the kind of man who could be bribed. Then while I tried to sleep. Hello?
Mark? Mm-hmm. This is Gretchen Sachs, Herbie's wife.
Yeah. Hello, Gretchen.
Did you read about Herbie in the papers this morning?
Yeah, I read, Gretchen.
I want to talk to you, Mark.
Talk?
It's important. Can you come out to the house?
Have the police been out to the house yet?
No. I was down for a few minutes at the morgue to identify the body.
That's all?
That's all. It's important that I talk to you. I was on the other end of the phone, Mark.
Why didn't you answer me when I picked up the receiver?
I had to take time to think things through.
Have you thought them through?
Yes. Will you come out to the house and talk to me?
Yes. Gretchen, I'll be out. In a little while.
I'll wait for you.
It was Herbie's own wife, Gretchen, on the phone. Sweet and lovable Gretchen. And now the wife of the man I murdered waits to talk with me. What about? The weather? No. No, she waits to talk business. Before the police arrive, she waits to take up where the fat man left off. Another murder of necessity. Ring the doorbell, murderer.
Hello, Mark. Come in. Mark! Oh, Mark. You fool. You...
I'm sorry, Gretchen.
I hated him. I hated him.
What are you saying?
I couldn't stand him. Everything he was, I hated. He wouldn't let me go.
No, I don't believe you.
Last night, I called him on the telephone. Called him to tell him to come home. Because...
No.
When he got home, Mark, I was going to kill him.
Gretchen.
Operator,
get me police headquarters. I just committed a murder that wasn't necessary at all.
Valley 103.1.
And now the Whistler's strange story. Fateful Friday.
Friday, May 16th, seemed like any one of the 512 Fridays Mr. Brown had spent as an employee of Crandall & Ames, certified public accountant. With a morning ride to his office on the crowded subway. Deadly hours over an adding machine, interrupted only by the usual cheese on rye and glass of milk in the company cafeteria. The ride down from the 40th floor of the Crandall building in the crowded elevator past 5 after his work was over. And the usual Friday remarks to his fellow employee.
Nice, Brown.
Thanks, George. Have a nice weekend.
Same to you.
See you Monday, Frank.
Yeah, another day, another dollar.
Same floor.
Well, thanks, Steve. Say hello to your family.
And as usual on Fridays, Mr. Brown, you weave through the crowd in the lobby to the door of the Gourmet, a rather elegant tobacco, liquor, and food shop, a glittering storehouse of delicacies, of fine wines and good living.
Brown.
Good evening, Elsie.
Glad you stopped in tonight. I was going to call your office. We just got a shipment of French champagne, Veuve Clicquot.
Oh, Veuve Clicquot. Good. What vintage?
1929.
1929. Not bad. But there are better vintages, Elsie. 1921. That's the vintage I'm looking for. You'll let me know, of course.
Of course, Mr. Brown. Now, here's something you've asked about. A jar of that very fine caviar.
Yes, let's see. Elsie, encased within every one of these tiny eggs is a paradise of exquisite flavor. Ah, yes. Here we really have something. Just hold that for the time being.
Certainly, Mr. Brown. And here are some of those clear Havanas that just came in. $2 special.
Yes, I see. Tell you what, Elsie. Just for tonight,
why
don't you give me a couple of those 2 for 50 cent samples?
Those things you say, Mr. Brown, like there was too much rain in 1929 for good champagne and so on. Are they true?
Any true connoisseur knows there were 27 inches of rain that year. Too much for good champagne.
I don't understand how somebody like you, I mean...
You mean, why does a man who earns $45 a week bother to learn about things he'll never be able to afford? I don't know, Elsie.
But doesn't it make you unhappy, knowing and not having?
I'm going to have it someday, Elsie. You know, someone said a man can have anything he wants, if he wants it bad enough. And I do.
Yes, that's the cross you bear, isn't it, Mr. Brown? Trying to reconcile the appetites of a gourmet with a bookkeeper's budget, with a drab bachelor apartment you come home to after a stifling ride on the subway. And yet, dull as it seems, this Friday is a remarkable one, set apart in a curious way from all the other Fridays in your uneventful little life, as the kind of a day that will prove exciting things can happen even to people like you. As you walk into your apartment building, you have no way of knowing, of course, that in reaching into your mailbox in the lobby, you're putting your hand on something that will change your whole life. A moment later, you toss your hat on the table in the living room, slit open the largest and fattest of the envelopes in your mailbox. It's then that you see it and clutch the table for support as a cascade of currency pours out onto the floor. Then find yourself on your knees, staring at it, feeling it and counting.
1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 7,000.
You go on counting, piling it up. 18,000, 30. And then a scribbled note.
Here is the 40 grand. Good luck. Mike.
40,000. But where is it? In my mailbox.
You study the envelope. There's no stamp, no return address. Someone obviously dropped the money in your box by mistake. You shove the money aside, leave your apartment, and go back to the lobby, trying to make sense out of it, knowing the money can't belong to you. The answer is there waiting for you on the row of mailboxes, particularly on the card on the end, with a newly penciled notation over apartment 12. Another William Brown. You stand there a moment, staring blankly at the card. Then, without quite knowing why, you find yourself walking upstairs, on up to apartment 12, just above yours. And even as you ring the buzzer, something inside is telling you of the doors that money could open, of the new world waiting for you if you had the nerve, of how easy it would be with $40,000 in cash, unmarked, with no strings attached.
What do you want?
Excuse me. I'm afraid I have the wrong apartment.
Well, the voice inside was a telling one, wasn't it, Mr. Brown? You've made your decision now, and you know there's only one way to go from here on. You forget about dinner, sit alone in your apartment for the next 2 hours looking at the money, wondering what you're going to say when the man upstairs starts asking questions. Your first impulse is to move out of the apartment, but you decide it's best for the moment to stay, to go on as usual as if nothing had happened, to give the man upstairs as little reason as possible to suspect you. And then, just after 8 o'clock...
Just a minute.
Mr. Brown?
That's right.
Sorry to bother you. My name's Brown, too. I just moved in a few days ago.
Oh?
I was worried that you might be inconvenienced. That's quite a coincidence, you know.
What do you mean?
It seems there's not only two Browns in the building. There's two William Browns, too. We got the same first name.
Well, that is odd.
I got a bunch of noisy friends. I hope they haven't been disturbing you, coming here by mistake.
Oh, no.
And as a matter of fact, until the mailman gets onto it, I'm liable to get some of your mail and vice versa.
It hasn't happened so far. I wouldn't let it bother me if I were you.
I see. You know, once in a while I get something kind of important, business stuff and all. I wouldn't want to see anybody make a mistake.
Oh, no.
You know, a little thing like that can be pretty serious sometimes. But with the postal authorities and all.
Now, see here, are you implying that
No, don't get me wrong. Just thought a friend of mine might have got mixed up. You know how it is. I'm expecting an important envelope from him. Just forget it, Mr. Brown. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Brown.
$40,000.
Yes, it was a fateful Friday, wasn't it, Mr. Brown? The simple mistake at the apartment house mailboxes that placed $40,000 in your hands. But there's a string attached to it. Yes. The small matter of the rightful owner of the money. The other Mr. William Brown, upstairs in apartment 12. Your first impulse was to run away, wasn't it, Mr. Brown? Until you began to think how the man upstairs might begin putting things together. And there was something about him that told you he was not the kind to take this lying down. But there are a few things you can do. One of them, of course, is to call at the little gourmet shop first thing Monday morning.
Ah, good day, Mr. Brown.
Good day, Elsie.
What can I do for you? Perhaps a case of that very fine brandy you're so fond of.
Let me see a bottle.
Of course, sir. Here you are.
Excellent. Good district. Exactly the right age. Tell you what, Elsie, I think we'll open this bottle right here.
Mr. Brown!
Mind if I borrow this corkscrew? Thank
you. Mr. Brown, don't open that bottle!
Now, two glasses, please. Brandy snifters, of course.
If anyone should see us, Mr. Brown,
I'll pour, Elsie. You and I are going to sample this. There. A vote for bon santé. That's French for your very good health. Delicious, Elsie. First rate. Perfection.
Mr. Brown, that bottle cost $19.95.
Indeed, very reasonable. At that rate, Elsie, I believe I'll take a case.
What?
Have it delivered COD, will you? You know the address.
That does it. Well, that takes care of all the measurements.
Thank you, Herman. Herman's our best tailor. Now, don't go away, Herman. We may want something else. That's a beautiful suit, Mr. Brown. The newest thing out. And that pinstripe gives you height.
Oh, yes. Yes, it does.
And we can have it ready for you on, Wednesday?
That'll do.
Fine. Thank you very much. Now, I'll help you into the other things.
No, wait. I'm not through. I'd also like something in the tweed and perhaps cashmere.
Oh, of course, Mr. Brown. Here, sit right down, sir. I'll bring some things out. How very best. I'll just be a moment.
Take your time. Is this today's set?
Yes, the noon edition. Ah, the things that are going on in this town. Look at that headline.
$40,000 held key in highway shooting. What's this?
I knew the fella that got shot, Mike McKean. And I made a suit for him once.
What sort of business was he in?
Oh, you know. What kind aren't they in? The crowd that Mike ran around with had a string on all the rags.
I see.
Look how they end up, with a bullet in the back.
Yeah. Says here he was alive when the police found him.
Mm-hmm. Died, though, before he could tell him enough. Just something about 40 grand he delivered to somebody. Only the other fellow claimed he never got it and shot him. Terrible, isn't it? People like that running around loose, you never know.
Ah, here we are, Mr. Brown. Everything you'd ever want to, sir. Imported tweed, cashmere.
Well, look, some other time. I know, I forgot there's something I have to do. Just alter this first suit and send it out. I'll be back.
Well, you know best.
Yes, Mr. Brown, you do know best. Because there isn't any question in your mind that the shooting of Mike McKeon described in the papers is directly related to your $40,000. It's strange, isn't it? How you've come to look upon the money as yours now. How you resent the strings attached to it. The man in the apartment above you, the struggle that must have taken place when Mike McKeon was shot. But you've long since decided that it isn't going to do them any good. If the trail leads back to you, you're going to have an answer to their question. But one false step always requires another, doesn't it, Mr. Brown? And that's why, shortly after leaving the clothing store, you find yourself talking to a shoddy little man in an equally shoddy shop on the Lower East Side.
And just what kind of a gun did you have in mind, Shorty?
Oh, I don't know. Something small, compact, an automatic, perhaps.
What about the one in the case here on the end? 32? Nice little automatic. Dependable.
Well, that ought to do. Let's see it.
Here you are. Chicken handle, of course, but it's a good buy.
Fine, I'll take it.
Just like that, huh? Okay, well, let's see now. I'm supposed to write your name down there. What is it, huh?
Why, C.J. Wilson.
That'll be 25 hours, Mr. C.J. Wilson. Plenty for the gun and five for not asking questions.
And there's something else, isn't there, Mr. Brown? Even with this new protection, the incident in the newspapers tells you that now you've got to move out of the apartment, no matter what suspicions it might arouse. And late that night, you slip into the apartment building, hurry down the corridor to let yourself in. You're about to put the key in the lock when...
Hello, Mr. Brown.
Huh? Oh, it's...
Mr. Brown, that's right. I'm waiting for you.
Oh?
I thought we ought to have another little chat.
No, but it's so late. I don't see why whatever it is can't wait.
Can't wait at all, Mr. Brown. Come on.
Well, where are we going?
Upstairs. We can talk much better in my apartment. Now, look, Mr. Brown, there's no point in our going round and round about this. Like I said, I made one mistake. I don't want to make another.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about at all.
Well, the most important thing I'm talking about is $40,000.
That's quite a sum.
Isn't it? Yeah, a man could do quite a bit on 40 G's. Buy things, travel. That's what I intended to do. I sort of need to travel, Mr. Brown.
Your, health?
My, health.
Too bad.
Yeah. You know, Mr. Brown, you're good. Really good.
I don't understand.
Oh, yes, you do. It's as simple as those two names in the mailboxes downstairs. Remember, I said I might get some things intended for you?
Oh, yes, and I might...
get some things intended for me. Now, how about it? Want to give it back?
No, this doesn't make sense. Why, I never knew there was that much money in the world.
Until last Friday, then you found out different, huh?
I didn't find out anything. You say you made a mistake. You're making another one accusing me.
I'm only accusing you of being human, Mr. Brown. You know, with the little weaknesses that all of us have. Well, I'd have done the same thing you did.
I didn't do anything.
Skip it. I just had to be sure this time, that's all. Mike McKean was right when he told me he put the money in the mailbox. I made a mistake with Mike, but I won't make a mistake with you. Well, you're full of surprises, aren't you? Even bought yourself a gun.
It's loaded.
I'm sure of it.
And I'm not afraid to use it.
I'm not so sure. Let's be reasonable about this, Mr. Brown.
Don't come in here. I'll shoot.
We'll write off what you've spent so far.
Don't come in.
Now, let's have the gun like a good...
Yes, Mr. Brown, in that moment you found that you'd do anything to keep your $40,000, even kill a man. The thought brings your mind up short, and an impulse starts you toward the door, and the blood pounds in your head as you make your way to your own apartment. Open the door and get inside.
Oh, Lord. Hope nobody saw me. Bed. Get into bed. That's where I should be.
Yes?
I'm sorry to disturb you so early in the morning, Mr. Brown.
This
is Mr. Simpkins, the manager. I wonder if you could come down to my office right away.
Your office? But I'm not dressed.
It's really very important.
All right. I'll come down.
Mr.
what to tell you, Lieutenant.
This Brown who was killed was beyond me. I never knew what he did or what his business was.
Just a minute.
Good morning.
Oh, this is the other William Brown, Lieutenant.
Hello.
How do you do? Something wrong?
I'd say so. You a pretty sound sleeper, Mr. Brown?
What? Oh, I'm sorry.
Hear anything unusual last night?
Well, I don't know.
About 11 o'clock.
Well, I was in bed, of course. You said 11.
Oh, that's right.
11. Yes, I remember. I looked at the clock. I heard a door slam upstairs and somebody running past my door.
Mm-hmm. Is that all?
Yes, that's all. I thought it was probably one of Mr. Brown's friends.
What do you know about Mr. Brown's friends?
He came to me the other day. He said he hoped his visitors wouldn't get our names confused. He told me he had a lot of noisy friends.
Had indeed. Any particular reason why you use the past tense there?
Why, no. What's the matter?
What about it, Mr. Simpson?
Well, no. Not this, Mr. Brown. He couldn't have done it.
Okay.
Here, I wish you'd tell me.
Sorry, Mr. Brown. I just had to make sure. Your friend upstairs was murdered last night.
Murdered? Why would anyone kill Mr. Brown?
His name wasn't Brown, it was Marco, Victor Marco. He was in the kind of business where people do get killed from time to time.
You understand, Lieutenant, I had no way of knowing when I let him have the apartment.
Yeah, he came here to hide out, of course. That's a revenge job, and I think I can put my finger on the guy who did it, if the thing is kept quiet. That means neither of you say anything to anybody about this until you see it in the papers. Is that clear?
Yes, Lieutenant, I understand.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks to both of you. And Mr. Brown.
Yes?
I'm sorry I was a little short with you.
Oh, that's quite all right. However, Mr. Simpkins, with this sort of thing going on here, I'm afraid I'll have to move.
I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Brown.
I don't blame you. If it was me, I'd leave too. And I wouldn't stop with this apartment either. I'd leave the whole darn town flat.
It's hard to believe, isn't it, Mr. Brown? 4 days ago, you were a nobody. A dull little molecule in the tide of humanity that surges in and out of town at commuting hours. Today, you're important. A man of wealth. And somehow the fact that you've murdered a man to get there doesn't matter anymore. On the morning after your talk with the police lieutenant, you're packing your things, making ready to leave when...
Oh, must be some of the things I ordered off the moving people. Yes?
Mr. Brown?
Yes?
Hope you don't mind the intrusion, Mr. Brown.
See here. Now, what do you want?
I'm sure. Mike McCain's friend. You've heard of me. Victor?
Victor?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I'm not Victor. You've made a mistake.
You made a mistake, Victor, out there on the highway.
What highway? Listen, I tell you, my name's Brown. I don't know anything about
that. Shut up. Mike McCann was a nice guy, Victor. Mike said he delivered that dough. I know he did. You got it.
Look, I tell you, I'm not Victor. Look, look at this apartment. Does it look like I have money?
Wait a minute. Boy told me Victor was living here under the name of William Brown.
He was upstairs. There were two William Browns. Here's my business card. W.T. Brown, Crandall and Ames. I haven't any money. I'm just a clerk there. I make 45 a week.
Who William Brown? Listen, are you on the level?
Yes. I tell you, the other William Brown, the one upstairs, was...
Hey, right there. Okay.
Here's your brandy, Mr. Brown. Gourmet shop. Sign right here.
You got the wrong...
Hold it. How much is that?
$230 each.
Here's your suit, Mr. Brown. Wednesday morning, right on the nose. They're holding the tweed and cashmere for you.
But I...
COD, $118 on this one.
Sorry, boy. Mr. Brown can't take care of it right now. Try tomorrow. Huh?
But Mr. Brown and...
Well, this is COD, too. We can't make another trip just for...
Yeah, but... No money, huh? Just a poor working stiff. They tell me you always did live well, Victor. Fancy suits, brandy by the case.
You
He'll never get away with it.
Yeah, I know. They'll pick me up all right. But one more is not going to make any difference. Except to my friend, Mike McKean. Yeah. Yeah, to Mike, it'll make a lot of difference. So long, Vicky. This time, your expensive taste caught up with you.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, drinking beer in a cabaret, was I having fun? Until one night she caught me right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, I see you every night, Bing, and I'll woo you every day. I'll be your regular mama, and I'll put that gun away.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay the thing down before it goes off and hurts somebody. Oh, she kicked out my windshield and she hit me over the head. She cussed and cried and said I'd lied and she wished that I was dead.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down. With three tough gals from deep down Texas way, we got no pals. They don't like the way we play. We're a rough, rootin', tootin', shootin' trio, but you ought to see my sister Cleo. She's a terror, make no error, but there ain't no laissez-faire. Here's what we tell her.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol baggin' mama, lay that pistol down.
The draw was slow, so now they know you can't do that to Maine.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down.
Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down.
Oh, singing songs in a cabaret, was I having fun? Till one night it didn't seem right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down, pistol back and mama, lay that pistol
down.
Oh, pistol back and mama, lay that pistol
about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.